Well, welcome back, everybody. This is The Horse Show, and I'm Rick Lamb. Well, today is an absolute thrill for me because I have with me the lady who created Centered Riding and wrote the book of the same name, Miss Sally Swift. Sally, welcome to The Horse Show.
Nice to be here.
This is such a thrill for me. As I said, I would like to, for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with your background, I want to read a little bit from the flap of your book, Centered Riding. This is an preface written by Edward Emerson, president of the U.S. Combined Training Association. And I'm paraphrasing here. He says, Sally Swift has been a pioneering riding instructor for half a century. Unlike traditional teachers, Sally does not believe in forced training techniques that cause stiff bodies and tense riding. Instead, through the use of vivid, unusual, and highly creative images that transcend mechanics, for instance, pretend you're a spruce tree. The roots grow up from your center as the trunk grows down. Plus a thorough knowledge of human and equine anatomy, this wise and inspiring teacher enables the conscientious equestrian to reassess habitual responses in order to ride in natural positions, break through frustrating plateaus, and achieve ever-rising goals with comfort, vitality, and precision. And I think that says it so well.
Then he knows how to use words, and that's really very good, yes.
Well, I would say that you also have quite a bit of skill in that area. This book is just so easy to read, Sally, and I find it thoroughly uplifting and positive. I think for those of us who are trying to improve our riding, you give some such wonderful tools and techniques, and they are presented in such a colorful way. And it all so much of it has to do with this idea of visual imagery, which I think you must have been the first one that really started promoting that.
Well, probably I was one of the early ones anyway, and it certainly does work. I had a little trouble at first because people caught on to the imagery so much that that's all they were teaching was the imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not work if you don't know the anatomical physiology behind it, how the skeleton, for instance, works, which is the core of your body, and what your skeleton doesn't do, nothing else can do, because it both supports and it allows the body, the articulation of the joints allows you to move in all directions.
Right, and that's something that your book covers, I think, very, very well, with lots of wonderful drawings and illustrations, is just how our bodies really are put together. A lot of people are probably not even really aware.
It's amazing how few people know how their bodies work and where their joints are.
Something that is so familiar is yet so foreign to us.
So foreign, yes. We don't know our own bodies, and then when we do try to do something with them, we usually overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
And block things with tensions.
Well, I think it's fascinating how you link the idea of left brain and right brain, which a lot of people are familiar with, the basic division of the brain.
Yes, which still stands up. I mean, there's a lot of, they know a lot more than they did then, but it still basically is all right.
But the idea that you express in your book is how the left brain, which we depend on for our verbal communication and reasoning and logic and the more analytical side, quite often interferes with riding because we want riding to be a little bit more coming from the right side.
It's a little bit like a computer. You have to feed into the computer what you want. It can't function until you fed that in.
Right.
And then you let it go, and it goes whirl inside itself and comes out as a whole,
mm-hmm.
and as a complete package. And I think this is a little bit, in a very crude way, what happens in the brain. You feed into one side, and you learn the details, and they get put into the whole package. And when you work from the right brain more, you work with the whole picture.
Right.
And you allow it to happen. Now, well, two words that I emphasize a great deal in centered riding, aware and allow. Now, you have to be aware of what your body does. And this is where instructors help, because habit feels okay. What is habitual feels all right.
Mm-hmm.
Although it may not be. There may be a much better way of doing it. It's just that we've not used it. So you have to become aware of areas in your body movement or anything actually in life that you have restricted in your habits.
You know, something that comes to mind, too, is sometimes something feels a certain way, but when an impartial observer, somebody else, as you mentioned, an instructor, views it, it really, in reality, is quite different than the way we think it is.
That's absolutely correct.
We're just too close to it.
We're too close to it to see it, and the instructor helps us. And then a good instructor can teach you how to change that and have it feel different and be more efficient
mm-hmm.
and more correct
mm-hmm.
because a correct movement is usually efficient.
Right.
Then when you felt it, then you know at least where you're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then a good instructor will help you fill in the details and do it. And if you and repetition, of course, will eventually make it a new habit, and it'll all feel correct. And intellectually, you know it's correct right at the beginning, because as soon as you learn to move in the more correct way, you'll get a better response in your horse. And that is an instantaneous thing. And the horse is a wonderful teacher, because what you do incorrectly, they will resist. And what you do correctly, they will go along with,
You get that instant feedback from
You get instant feedback.
Yeah.
And that's why learning this on a horse is very effective, because you do get this instant feedback, whereas it's also what this same theory applies to everything you do in life, including raising your family. But you don't get the instant feedback. At least you're not aware of it as quickly as you are on a horse.
Well, as you point out in the book, too, the thing that bears that out is the fact that you can take a horse and put one rider on him who maybe is not quite as experienced, and the horse will not behave the way the rider wants him to, and they get the impression that this is just not a good horse. And you put a more experienced rider on him, and it's like a whole different horse.
That's absolutely true, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I am dying to get into the actual nuts and bolts of centered riding here, and I thought we would just go over the four basics right at the beginning to kind of give everybody the ground rules for
right.
what centered riding is built on. So
right.
I know that the very first one is soft eyes. Can you tell us a little about
that? Well, soft eyes are eyes that see peripherally. If you concentrate on one focal point, if you look at a knot in the piece of wood in the wall
mm-hmm.
and really focus on it, you are unaware of anything else.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that knot on the wall, but relax your eyes, which we call soft eyes, then you'll find that you will have a peripheral vision of probably 180 degrees, and yet you still are looking at that knot on the wall and conscious of it, but in a totally different way than in the hard-eyed, focused way.
And it's a more relaxed feeling throughout your body
right.
as well.
And the body can then relax and can feel, so that you're more aware of what you're sitting on. At the same time, that you're more aware of the people around you. If you're riding in a group of people in a small ring, you won't run into them
mm-hmm.
because you'll know where they are, so forth. Especially if everybody's using soft eyes, nobody runs into each other. If everybody's using hard eyes, there are constant crashes.
Well, you know, it also brings to mind the idea that when you really stare at something, sometimes you fatigue so quickly that eventually you're not seeing it anymore.
Exactly.
It's like you wear out your eyes or something. It's kind of like the same idea when you say a word over and over again, eventually it loses all meaning.
Yes.
So
that's a good parallel.
We're talking about the four basics of centered riding. We started with soft eyes, and number two is breathing.
If you're uptight and excited or startled, you will find that your breathing is very high in your body,
mm-hmm.
and there's no depth to it. If you let your diaphragm go down and widen. Now, the diaphragm is at the bottom of the rib cage, or it's across the body at the bottom of the rib cage.
Right.
It's shaped something like a mushroom, so it goes up into your chest cavity a bit. The root is down the lower spine, the lumbar spine, almost down to the pelvis itself. And when that root brings the diaphragm down, it comes down and spreads and brings air in, almost by vacuum, and it fills the entire rib cage.
Well, you have a wonderful analogy of it being like bellows.
Yes. Which, it is a lot like bellows.
Yeah, which when it's done properly, and I know this from all the years I was in chorus class, and I played a trombone for years, and we were taught to breathe from our diaphragm. It's a very different feeling from breathing from your chest, where you're kind of forcibly trying to expand your rib cage to draw in air. That takes a lot of effort.
That's a lot of effort, because you have to lift the ribs up with muscles. Now, the muscles do work, obviously, but they work in conjunction, so you get a coordinating thing going on. So the correct muscles do the work instead of putting all the work on muscles that really weren't meant to do that.
Right. And I think one of your centered riding instructors who's been on our show before mentioned that here in America, where we're so concerned about having a tiny waist, people are sometimes reluctant to really breathe from the diaphragm because it pushes your stomach out when you're doing it right.
It pushes all your guts down, you see.
Yeah. So vanity sometimes
does fill.
So vanity sometimes gets in the way.
It
but
certainly does get in the way.
You know,
of course, if you're really fit, it doesn't. The expansion is taken care of by the fit muscles.
Right. You have the muscle
tone.
So
you don't expand nearly as much as if you're just a flab.
Well, you know, I want to jump out to a consequence of even breathing before we continue with our four basics here, which I found absolutely fascinating, and that is that when you are breathing evenly and calmly, it has a tremendous impact on the gait of your horse, how even the gait is.
It certainly does.
Yeah. Why is that?
Well, because everything you do is reflected in the horse. And when you breathe erratically, or when you hold your breath because you're startled, or because you're scared, or because you're upset,
or concentrating
the horse
too hard,
says, "What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?" And so he gets all upset in an anticipation.
That is some kind of a danger signal, I guess, to horses. When
it absolutely is. Why is she holding her breath? Must be something wrong.
And I guess they're just so. Well, the thing we have to remember is just how sensitive a horse is to every little nuance of movement and sound and everything around them. So even though it may seem like our holding our breath would be imperceptible to the horse, that is not the case.
Yes, and one of the initial exercises I do with my students is the first day they ride with me, and this is almost regardless of how well they ride, I have them led by somebody on foot. When they have shut their eyes and dropped the reins, so they're just totally within themselves. And so I talk them the basics, and one of the things I get them to do is, after they've realized the rhythm of the horse's walk and things, I say, all right, now hold your breath. And then I ask them what happens, how does the horse respond? Well, they said he got tighter and shortened his stride. And this will happen every time, even on an old school horse.
Right. That's fascinating.
They're that sensitive. Now, it'll happen more on a sensitive thoroughbred, but it'll happen on any horse.
And as a consequence of that tensing, their back changes shape too, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it tightens up and tends to drop.
Right, but, and their head comes up.
And so they can't move as efficiently.
Right, right.
And breathing not holding your breath is really takes quite a lot of practice.
Oh, I know. It's something we do subconsciously. All the time.
Something goes wrong, and we hold our breath. You anticipate a problem place in the ring or down the road. You anticipate it. You had it. I mean, the horse is frightened.
Well, let's move on then to the next of the four basics, which is centering. And I think this gets into the very essence of the idea of centered riding.
Yes, it does. I feel that there's a large nerve center low in the body, or really almost partly in the pelvis, that is a nerve center for energy and control. The directives still come from your brain, but the work is carried out from the center. So if you have the directive and allow the center and find you and center yourself, the center will take over. And I tell people how to find their center. If you put one hand on your belly with your thumb on your navel and your little finger on the pubic arch, the palm of your hand will be in front of the center.
Right.
And you put the other hand on your top of your sacrum, the center will be between your two hands.
Right.
And this is the center of energy and control. And then I ask people to send some energy from their front hand out their back hand, just as they I usually have them standing up on their feet at this point, but you can do it on a horse. And then I say, all right, send the center, the energy from your back hand out the front hand. And I do that a couple of times till they get a little feeling of going back and forth through their body. They go right through the center each time.
Hmm.
And then from when they're out in front, I say, all right, take that energy and take it back and put it down in the middle of your between your hands. Put it in a nest. That's where it is. So now you locate it. Now how do you put it to work? You just think about it. As soon as you put your awareness on your center, it will do the job for you.
Well, I think you captured it right there in a nutshell. You just think about this. You know, and then the other point I wanted to make, which I believe is part of the concept of this being the center, is that isn't it also your center of gravity?
It's the same area.
Mm-hmm.
They are two different things. Your center of gravity is your balance point. And your center of control is just that.
Okay.
Now, the horse, who is horizontal, has a center of gravity that is just behind his elbow at the girth.
Well, you know, the imagery that you provide people to use does just allow you to sort of settle into that,
yeah,
that part of your body. And I have tried this sitting on the back of a horse, and folks, it absolutely works.
It does.
It just settles you right down into the saddle, and it's wonderful. It's amazing. And I guess to those of us in this sort of analytical age, it's hard to imagine that just a thought can translate into such a definite physical phenomenon.
I know. It does change people. It changes their outlook on life. It really does.
Well, you know, you draw the parallel to the Eastern martial arts sorts of things, thinking Tai Chi Chuan.
Yes, and Zen.
Right. And so this is something, folks, that goes beyond just being a better rider, although so all of us horse lovers, obviously that's a very important thing to us, but it does go far beyond that. It just gives you tools for life. Well, Sally, the number four of the four basics is building blocks. What does that mean?
Balance. It's just another way of saying balance.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put building blocks correctly, one on top of the other, for them to balance. If they're not that way, they're unstable or fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. We have to have our feet under us, our pelvis balanced over our feet, our upper body and rib cage balanced over the pelvis, and the head and shoulders balanced on top. And so building blocks is balance. And when you combine that with your breathing and soft eyes and centering, you've got a pretty nice package there. Sometimes when I start a class, I just let people go out and walk on long rein, and I just talk about the four basics, and I go round and round and round again and again. Soft eyes, centering, breathing, building blocks. And just talking about it and letting them be conscious of one and then the other and then the other and then the other, the horses relax and walk more freely and take deeper strides, and the people get more relaxed and more balanced. And if their feet have not been under them, their feet quite unconsciously start coming back under them. It happens.
Well, and it has such a, besides making us better riders, it makes such a more comfortable ride for the horse.
Oh, much. Of course, then the horse goes better. And then he's more willing to cooperate. Now, as time went on in my teaching, you see, I've been teaching this since 1970-something, 76, 78, 7, 70, so in there is when it began to formulate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been coming all the way ever since. And increasingly I found I needed to talk about grounding. To such an extent that I began to say, well, listen, maybe we've got to have five basics. And then my student said, no, Sally, you can't do that. The four basics are classic. And then I suddenly realized that grounding is the foundation on which the four basics rest.
Uh-huh.
And that my foundation is grounding. And if you don't have that, you can't. The four basics don't work.
Now, what do you mean by grounding?
I mean a feeling of connection with the ground. And I teach it by letting people stand on the ground and just think about their feet as if their feet were in sand. nice, slightly damp, warm sand, the kind that's comfortable and not too hot, not too cold. Mm-hmm. Makes an impression. And then realize that, you know, you can feel the sand under your ball of your foot, and then under each individual toe, and I go through the toes individually, big toe, second toe, and so forth, or toes, so you can do it on both feet at once. And then well, you kind of end up having connected the heel, the arch, everything. The sand fills the arch. The whole foot is connected to the ground. And if you lift your foot, you leave an impression, and if you put it down, you make a new impression. There is a real solid connection to the ground. Well, by the time that people have done this, they are glued to the ground. Now, that's a little strong. But they really, I said, now do you feel grounded? And I get an enthusiastic yes. Now, this isn't pushing into the ground.
Right.
This is allowing the ground and yourself and you to connect.
Right.
And if you allow that connection, it will connect just as well in the horse, on the horse, with or without stirrups.
Well, that's what I was going to say. This sounds very similar to the feeling you get when you settle down into the saddle and you truly form
it
that bond.
It simply enhances that.
Yeah.
And if you get grounded and the four basics going, you really have got something that is amazingly effective.
Gosh.
And powerful.
Well, folks, you've heard some of the imagery that Sally uses here. Sally, could we just, let's just take the posting trot, for instance, or as you call the rising trot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that is hard for new riders to kind of get the hang of it, but you have some wonderful imagery that helps people when they're trying to learn the posting trot. And one has to do with ice cream.
Yes, I know.
Tell us about that one.
Well, that really is the allowing the your consciousness to go down instead of pulling it up all the time. And you really have to be pretty centered to let the ice cream melt. If you're breathing up to type, the ice cream won't melt. It just won't. But you do have to go up. And the spruce tree in some ways is better because the spruce tree goes both ways. And it's very important because from your center, if you go up, you also have to go down to balance it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down, you need to go up. So that from your center, you go both ways. And the ice cream only goes one way, but some people need that.
Well,
because they go up so much that you've got to really work on something that keeps them down.
Well, folks, in case you're wondering what the heck we're talking about with ice cream here, the imagery is that you are like ice cream and just melting and seeping down over your horse all the way
right
to the ground. And
right,
that gives you, again, this imagery, this feeling of dropping down, dropping your center, and I imagine your center of gravity, just lower onto the horse's back, and it's one more technique that Sally gives you for doing that.
The center of gravity low in your body allows you yourself to be balanced and low and solid. And it also allows your body to widen as well as lengthen. And when you allow width in your pelvis and width in your shoulders and even width between your ears, you open the body for sensations.
Width between your ears. I like that. I saw how you slipped that in.
I know. People really like it when I do. It's ridiculous, of course, but it does release. And you see, that connection between the head and the top of the spine is tremendously important. Where the head rests on the spine, on top of the atlas, the top vertebra, there's a little slide point, and the occipital points on your skull at that point, which is actually between your ears, actually, it's way high. Half your neck is in your head. If you let those two little spots on the skull slide on the atlas, and then I say, put your thumb in your ear and your fingers on the top of your head and treat the skull, that part of the skull, like a wheel, and let the thumb go back a little, and that'll take the top of the head forward a little, and then let it go back to center again. And find that slippery spot between your ears, that slidey spot between your ears, which releases the back of the neck and lengthens it,
mm-hmm,
and softens the throat and tongue, and balances the head. And it's exactly the same motion that the horse does when he flexes on the bit. He releases his pole, which is where his spine connects with his skull.
Mm-hmm.
And he drops his face and chews. And he is immediately soft, not only in his jaw, but all the way down his back.
Interesting parallel between the horse and the rider.
It's absolutely. Because there's so much that's alike between us. It's I know he's horizontal and we're upright, but the joints are much the same. And from there, we move into the whole business of what I call comparable parts, which yeah. I barely touched on in the book because I was just beginning to fully understand it then. Any part of your body that you tense, the horse will tense his body. And if you ride with a tight jaw, you'll have a horse with a tight jaw.
Oh, interesting.
And if you ride with tight hips, you'll have a horse with a tight hip.
So it's not only that he's tightening up the same body part that you
do. He will tighten the same body part you tighten.
Well, you know, the thing we forget is that all vertebrate animals have similar bone structure. I mean,
absolutely.
If you were to look at the skeleton of a horse and the skeleton of a human, you would see so many parallels. You would see that fact, I think, would become very, very obvious to you.
It becomes very obvious. And a nice illustration that I have used many times is a horse, a skeleton, and a man's skeleton with his hands on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So his back is horizontal like a horse.
Right.
And then the joints are all there, hip joints. I mean, our knee is his stifle, and our ankle is his hock, and the toes from there on down.
Right.
And we all know that. And the shoulder blades. Now, his shoulder blades hang a little different than ours do. But they move on the ribs, over the ribs. They're not connected to the ribs anymore than ours are. Our shoulder blades are not connected to our ribs.
Right.
We act as if they were often, but once you get people's shoulder blades so they will slide around, you'll find your horse's shoulder blades slide better.
Gosh. Well, you know, folks, there is just so much in this book. It's the kind of thing that I think you would want to get and refer to over and over again. And there's an interesting feature that I found when I got to the back of the book, Sally, that I wasn't even aware it was there, but it's so handy and so thoughtful of you to put it in, and that is your Appendix 3, which is a quick review of useful images.
Yes, that's
and this is, yeah, this, well, it's so handy because
yeah.
you can just, it's like, Sally is obviously a master teacher, folks, because she knows, you know, when you tackle material like this, that you need to constantly review it. And at the end of each of her sections, she has a kind of a recap of the concepts and how that translates into actual movement or results with the horse. And then, of course, at the end, you've got this appendix with the review of all of these useful images. Sally, you also have, I believe, a videotape or a series of videotapes on centered riding?
I have two videotapes,
yeah.
Yes. It's the same tape on two parts.
Uh-huh.
They're each a 60-minute video. And it's fairly good. It helps a lot of people. You know, nobody's ever satisfied with their own work. But it is good, and I'm surprised at how much I knew then. I know more now, of course.
Now, when did you make that video?
The year after the book came out.
Oh,
the book came out in 85. And I guess I probably made it in 86.
Right.
It's basically okay. There are a few things I would like to see change and two things I'd like to see better. But never mind. It's basically okay.
There are a certain number of people that just do not care to sit down and read a book. And
I know.
I think
they sit down and watch that video over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well, the neat thing about a video, especially where writing is concerned, is you can use the medium the way, you know, for all of its unique benefits. You can stop it, you can rewind it, you can
yes.
go slow,
yes.
you can look
yes.
at the same thing over and over again and
that's
really,
right. and it does
really
help.
Get it. Yeah.
I am in the process of coming near the end of another book.
Oh, really?
And we haven't finished editing it yet, but it's coming back to me for a second review or third review or something rather at the end of the month.
Is there a title for it yet?
Yes, Scented Riding. you got me now.
Well, obviously, it's on centered riding.
Further explorations.
Further explorations.
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, we'll have everybody look.
It's not
for
centered riding too. Now, it's quite differently organized, and I think it has much more in it in a way, because there's new things, but the basic stuff is not new.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some chapters at the beginning about a slight review of the old book and about how the horse functions and use of self and how we use our bodies, and the fact that if we pay more attention to ourselves and get ourselves really correct, the horse understands it more easily than if we put all our attention on the horse and overload him. Right. And this is a very deep concept, that you've got to take care of you before you take care of the horse. Then there's a big section of the book, which is the middle section. It's carrying the centered riding step by step. Each chapter, and there are 12 or 13 chapters in that section, each chapter has two sections to it. We work on your feet,
mm-hmm.
and how you learn to feel these things and do these things on your feet and how they apply, and then a chapter on the horse where you take what you've learned on the ground and apply it on the horse.
Oh, great.
And I think this is pretty powerful stuff.
Well, you talk about the power of this, and all anyone has to do to be convinced of that is use some of the mental imagery that you provide there and see how that translates into a physicalization,
mm-hmm.
whether you're sitting at your desk reading the book or whether you're on the back of your horse trying some of these
mm-hmm.
things. So,
and I keep hearing you talk about nothing but the visualization. And the images are good, but the images do not stand up if you don't understand the body.
Right. And, of course, the book
and
goes into all of that.
I really have to emphasize that when I train teachers. It's so easy to teach images and so difficult to get across what the body really is.
Right.
It isn't really difficult, but you have to take it all to pieces and make people move individual parts of their body. Teaching them to find where the hip joint is ticklish. Now, that socket is the hinge for everything you do when you bend or unbend.
Right.
And if you don't know where that hinge is, all the imagery in the world isn't going to get you any
That's
good,
true.
You see?
That's true. That's true.
So it's very important to know where the bones are and how they function.
But, you know, I think that is the charm of your technique, because people who might not be willing to sit and think about human anatomy and study the pictures and so forth, because of what you've provided them in the way of these visualization tools, I think that gives them incentive to learn a little bit more about it. It draws you in, folks. It's no wonder to me anyway that centered riding has become so incredibly popular. Now, Sally, before I let you go today, I did want to talk a little bit about your life, and because you've overcome what would discourage so many people about even learning how to ride, and that is a problem with your spine that you've had since you were a young girl. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yes. I was diagnosed with a scoliosis, which is a lateral curvature, when I was about 7, I guess. I was already horse crazy.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was horse crazy, and I was too. And to make a long story short, I had the opportunity, good fortune from a wise parent, and luck to be put in the hands of very capable people while I was young. Mabel Todd in Boston, I went to see her every day twice a week for years.
Mm-hmm.
She had this feeling that you could move muscles very deep in your body with your mind when you couldn't move them by just moving an arm or a leg. So that I learned how the body worked. I learned the value of the deep psoas muscle in the pelvis very early in life. She always had a full-size skeleton beside the table so that you could see how it worked, the pictures of muscles. She called her treatments lessons, because they taught us. I learned about my body from the age I was 7. And so I was very conscious of it, and I learned somewhere in there she wanted me to ride because she took all my right-handed sports away from me.
Now, why was that?
I was so one-sided.
Yeah, you'd overdeveloped the right
side. I'd overdeveloped. Well, this is part of a scoliosis.
Right.
And I'm still overdeveloped on the right side. I mean, I still have the scoliosis.
Mm-hmm.
But I at least have my center over my feet, which most scoliosis will go off, the hips go off center. She did keep that centered and made a great difference to my life, I think. But I also learned in my riding that if I took a ball in my body and dropped it through my body into my pelvis, where it landed in mud, like with a thunk, I could then ride. And that I think was the seed for centered riding.
Now, say that again, if you visualized dropping.
I visualized, that's when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
That if I took something like a ball in my chest,
uh-huh,
and dropped it through the center of my body and it landed thunk in mud in, yeah, my pelvis,
yeah,
that I was then able to do what I could not do otherwise on a horse.
That thought caused your body to shift enough that...
Yeah, that brought me down. Because don't forget, I had years of training with her.
Uh-huh. Wow.
But that gave me the... She never talked about centering. She never talked about that. But I discovered this from her teaching, you see. And once I discovered that, that's the way I rode. Now, I didn't dare teach like that, because when you're young, you don't dare go out on a limb to the extent you do later.
Mm-hmm.
And when I picked up riding again after working for, you know, 20 years at the Holstein office, I decided I wanted to teach my friends. I've always loved teaching. I love teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be one of the people who is a good teacher. I think if you're a good teacher, you're a good teacher, and you're born that way. You can learn it, but being born that way is a big help. Well, I started teaching my friends, and I started playing with this concept. And, of course, it worked. And the more it worked, the more people loved it. And I never advertised. I never did anything. It all went by word of mouth.
Wow.
I used to teach for nothing, and then I taught for $50 a day. And well, it isn't that anymore. But by word of mouth, it's gone all over the world.
Wow. Wow. Well, this has been an absolute delight chatting with you, and I hope to be able to meet you in person one of these days. Do you get out and
around? I don't travel much anymore. I'm 84 now. I'll be 85 in the spring, and my legs have neuropathy, and they don't work the way they should work in spite of all my good intentions. Just for fun, the American Riding Instructor Certification Program, the AIRICP, which is developing, I've been a speaker there, and Denny's been a speaker there since 1988.
Yeah.
They this year gave me a Lifetime Achievement Award, which I'm really very proud of.
Well, as well you should be. Well, Sally, thanks so much for being with us today, and hopefully we can talk to you again when the new book comes out.
Good. Thank you much.
You bet.